Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Winning isn't everything. He wouldn't know. He's never lost. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This Wednesday, May the 20th, 2015, it's Primetime Sports, the nation's most listened to sports talk show. And it comes to you on the Sportsnet family of networks, both radio and television. I'm Bob McCown, that's Ken Reed. Nick Kyprios will join us. There's no waving. Nick Kyprios will join us in just a few minutes, and Shai Davidi, Bob Nicholson, the Oilers Entertainment Group CEO, will be with us. Seems like months ago that they named their new head coach. It was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, of course, buried in the announcement today was the that football team whose name escapes me.
Poor Argos, eh?
Once again.
Thunder stolen.
Well, MLSE undermines MLSE's announcement.
Yes.
So, and then I don't know who's going to judge. Do we know who's going to be with us at 6 o'clock as yet? We don't? No? Shaking heads? Damien's coming in? Is he? Well, Damien Cox will be here. Perhaps Ken Holland. Now, we did listen to Kenny's news conference, and I thought it was extremely revealing. One of the things I took from it was that at 8 o'clock this morning, Mike Babcock had not made a decision. Mm-hmm. Having been in a similar situation a couple of times in my life, I'm going to put two and two together and say, I don't know this for a fact, by the way. Mike Babcock was reacting naturally. He had an offer from Buffalo, we presume. He had an offer from Toronto. I don't know if he decided which of those two he was more likely to take. But he went to see his friend, his very close friend, Ken Holland, this morning at Holland's house at 8 a.m. and essentially was looking for a last offer. Can you give me something that lets me stay? Because right now, the gap between Detroit's offer and Toronto's offer is too wide. I'm guessing that Holland, that was the purpose of the meeting. By 11 o'clock when he called, or 11:15 when he called Kenny back, he'd made his decision. Because essentially, I think Kenny said, you know, this is about the best we can do.
I think Holland and his presser said he'd made him a four-year offer in June, a four-year last January, and kind of said five is the best I can do, and I think it's natural to go somewhere. You've been with the guy for, what, 10 years? So you go back. They're obviously friends.
I think his first preference was to stay. His inclination was to stay. And it's, I think that's a natural inclination.
Sure it is.
Understand the enemy that you know is always better than the enemy that you don't know.
And it's also a natural inclination to look out for the future of yourself and your family and to take what's best. And I don't know if there's anybody out there who would leave all that money on the table, millions in guaranteed cash. He basically won the Lotto Max today.
Well,
$50 million, that's winning the Lotto Max. And can I just say, shock me, like, Toronto? Really? Didn't see that coming at all. So props to the Maple Leafs. I know a lot.
You didn't see it coming because nobody saw it coming.
Nobody saw it coming.
Nobody. Everybody thought the Maple Leafs were out of it.
Sure they did.
Well, and that's credit to Shanahan and the Maple Leafs, mm-hmm, for staying under the radar.
Yeah, and waiting and the stealth move. And you know what? Absolute credit to them, because I sit here like a lot of other people on the radio and take jabs at the Leafs, and most of the time they deserve them. But today they actually deserve a few props for doing what they did. And they put a lot of money on the table for a guy that they think is going to bring some credibility to a franchise that's desperately in need of it. And they win. The Leafs win today. So if you're a Leafs fan, you can actually celebrate. Having said that, it's a long way to go, but they still won today.
I'm just unsure what this signing means.
It's street cred. They have a good coach now. It's the start of a very long process. I guess you could say Brendan Shanahan was the first step, and this is another move in a very,
but Shanahan
very long
doesn't
process.
Have any credibility compared to Babcock.
He does now. He just signed Mike Babcock.
I don't know. I mean, historically, he doesn't have the history. I'm not saying he's incompetent.
He was one respected player, and I think right now with this move, you got to say, wow, he made a good move. This is his first big move. He kind of sat back, got his lay of the land, a team collapse.
I said in the last hour, and I'll repeat it, the only thing he's really proven to me is that he has the ability to spend somebody else's money.
Oh.
And those guys are, you can find them on any tree in any forest. So I think the jury's still out on Shanahan and what he will be as a president. I give him props for doing this if, in fact, this winds up working.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the difference was between what the Sabres offered and what the Leafs offered, if we ever find out an exact number. And Shanahan, obviously, had to do a sales job, because I'm thinking, I don't know how far apart it would have been, but there's calls out of Buffalo today that the Sabres made a pretty substantial offer, so you got to give Shanahan some credit, I think, don't you?
Well, I've said for weeks, I've been told that Babcock's asking price was 5 and 25. He wound up with 8 and 50.
He won.
In a bidding war that didn't seem to exist, that had seemed to have dissipated down to arguably one team, maybe two, clearly there were at least three, maybe more than that. We don't know what San Jose's interest was. We don't know what St. Louis's interest was. We don't know whether Philadelphia made a serious offer. We don't know how many of those teams were looking at the payrolls of other NHL coaches, looked at Joel Quenneville at 2.75 as the highest paid coach. Maybe they were all prepared to make Babcock the highest paid, but maybe it was at 3 or 3.25.
You know what? We can say that, and I mean, a salute to Mike Babcock and whoever worked out this deal with him, because we sat here yesterday going, wow, I think he overestimated his market, because the Oilers jumped in early on McClellan, and now he's down to Buffalo and Detroit. He's not going to get that big payday, and look what he did. So, you know what? He certainly fooled me. He certainly fooled a lot of people, because I did not see this coming. I still wonder why anybody would want to take on this job of coaching the Leafs, because it seems to me they were a long, long way away from turning this into a winner. It's a great day today, but he's in for some rough times, so he's going to have to be prepared for that. Going to have to preach some patience with the fan base, because I don't think Mike Babcock's going to score any goals for them this year. It's going to be a slow process.
What kind of a difference can he make, even if he is the best coach in the NHL?
I think the difference he can make is just, it's an overall change within the organization, how you approach the game, how you prepare yourself. It was a country club there at the end of the season, wasn't it? Players, do you think players were busting their butts, going all out, putting out the maximum effort at the end of that season?
Well, I think some were and some weren't. I think the majority of players are young and relatively inexperienced, and still fighting for jobs, and I think they were playing to the best of their abilities. I think the core of veterans were essentially mailing it in. Mm-hmm. I hope that's the case. I hope they weren't playing at 100%, because if that's the case, this organization has a long, long, long way to go. Nick Kypreos joins us from the NHL on Sportsnet offices. Kipper, It seems this deal came out of left field.
It did.
Did you have any inkling, any sense that the Maple Leafs were still in the picture prior to today?
Well, I think Mike Babcock didn't think that the Leafs were going to be in the picture 24 hours ago. I'm told that he gave the Buffalo Sabres the impression that he was going to be coaching the Buffalo Sabres, and that he thought that he made up his mind. But the one stipulation that he told Buffalo was that I've got to go back to my family one last time. And that's when things derailed for Buffalo. And then he turned around and he went down the QEW and talked to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So, Nick, are you under the impression that Babcock initiated the talks with Toronto in the last 24 hours?
Well, he was always holding the cards, Ken. Mm-hmm. It was never about the Leafs. Brendan Shanahan made it abundantly clear a year ago when he knocked on the door of the Detroit Red Wing organization, said, can we speak to Mike now? And they said, no, you're going to have to wait a year if you want to take a crack at him. And that was always the intention for Brendan Shanahan, is to land the big fish. And today he got him.
Ken Holland, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, in his news conference, which was both heard and seen here on Sportsnet about an hour or so ago, made reference to a meeting this morning at 8 a.m. at Kenny's house. Yeah. Babcock calls him, says, I'm coming over. Was there, he said, for around 40 minutes, I believe.
Yeah.
If you put two and two together, my surmising of that was that Babcock was looking for a last offer from Detroit.
Yeah.
Can you come?
Possibly. But I think Kenny Holland made it abundantly clear where the organization was going to go and where they weren't going to go. So I don't think Mike Babcock this morning had any real thought that Detroit was going to change their mind. Let's face it. If Detroit Red Wings and the Ilitch family really wanted to hold on to Mike Babcock, he'd still be in Detroit. They would have just matched anything. They've done it in the past with the Red Wings organization. They've done it in the past with their baseball team. Money wouldn't have been an issue here, or term moving forward. But they had a cap for Mike Babcock, and they stuck to it.
I have a slightly different viewpoint on it. I think that Babcock, as many of us have, when in the last few minutes of making a decision, realized that he wasn't unhappy in Detroit, and that his preference, the easiest thing to do would be to just stay where he is, and all he was looking for is, can you juice it up a little bit? You don't have to match Toronto, just get it reasonably close.
Oh my goodness. How do you get close to $50 million?
I don't know. Well, clearly they couldn't.
No.
But I think I'm guessing that was the nature of the conversation this morning.
I think Mike was smarter than that. I think Mike knew, but I think he also,
his preference, his number one choice was to stay in Detroit.
Yeah.
I think that's what he wanted. He made it clear that his family was comfortable there, that they liked it there. He'd been there 10 years. There's always a little intimidation and fear over changing jobs, moving cities, uprooting your family, all that kind of stuff. He just wanted at the last minute to make sure that Detroit wasn't in the picture.
Quite possibly. But these guys go a long way. Ken spoke of their friendship. Listen, you've done negotiations in the past. You know, you're not having barbecues and winning, you know, championships year after year with, you know, a corporation. So those are hard negotiations.
Sure they are.
This is entirely different between Ken Holland and Mike Babcock. I don't think there was any BS the last 6 months between them. They knew exactly where they stood. They knew exactly where they would go in negotiations and they wouldn't. Maybe it was just closure today for Mike Babcock with Ken Holland, that's it.
I'll lean with you a little, Nick, because I think if there is a big gap, you just kind of have to look at your buddy and say,
look, you can't leave that money on the table. I really believe that it was Buffalo and Toronto and 24 hours ago between Mike Babcock's family, similar contracts, I'm sure. Maybe Toronto re-upped it. I think the closure in this deal with Babcock and the Toronto Maple Leafs was the fact that he is also seen as a managerial type of guy making key decisions. I don't believe that Babcock answers to Kyle Dubas, Mark Hunter, He doesn't answer to anybody but the president of the organization, and that's Brendan Shanahan. And those two guys collectively will run this organization from a hockey standpoint.
What does he, as a former player, what does he bring to this organization that can expedite the process?
Winning. A winning perception, a winning attitude, and that's all you need to know. And I kind of lived it in 94 with Keenan, and there's a lot of reasons not to like Mike Keenan. If you ever heard him talk to some of your teammates, and on occasion, you know, yourself, you sit there and go, I don't know if this is a good guy here, you know, but he's a winner, and he loves to win. And we know other hockey players love to win. So that's what he brings the Toronto Maple Leafs, is a reputation and credibility to be a winner. And you need to, if you're Brendan Shanahan, you need a couple of those pieces now in the organization so you can start attracting other winners. And if that means down the road an unrestricted free agency or getting a star player to waive his no-trade clause at the deadline, you want to create that culture. And I know it's overused as much as anything in pro sports now is the culture word, but it means a lot to players knowing that that's a winning culture, and I'm about to join it.
Nick, if you think that Mike doesn't answer to anyone except Brendan, do you think that they're going to get together? Because I doubt if they have already, because this was such a whirlwind 24 hours. And Mike Babcock's going to look at his roster, or perhaps some point during training camp, once he gets to know his players a little bit better, and he says, I can work with this guy, I can't work with this guy, I can work with this guy, I can't work with this guy. Do you see that happening, him having that much influence on the roster?
Guaranteed.
Yeah?
Guaranteed. Not do I think that that's the case. You got to believe that had to been the case for Babcock moving forward here. Mm-hmm. And again, he comes in with as much power as anybody in the organization. It's him and Brendan hand in hand here moving forward.
So having said that, how long until the Kessel rumors start again, the Phaneuf rumors start again, guys like that?
Well, it depends on what Babcock wants to do with them.
Well, if Brendan has an offer he can't refuse for them, they're gone. If they don't think that they're going to get very good value in return, then come September, October, you know, there's a chance that the roster could look fairly similar to the one that just ended here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mike Babcock's done a lot of research here. He's talked to a lot of people. I think he has a better understanding, not so much the players and how they perform on the ice, but maybe behind the scenes on what type of leaders they are off the ice. I think Mike Babcock's probably done a lot of research and asked a lot of questions, and maybe for some on that roster, he may have to see it himself, and that may mean getting the month of October and November to better assess what he has in that room on a daily basis. But I think Brendan Shanahan's made up his mind on a lot of pieces moving forward on what he'd like to keep and get rid of, and I would assume that Babcock would already be on the same page somewhat moving forward. Now, is there a name he might want to hold on to and convince Shanahan not to make a trade at the draft or early in the season? Yeah, that might be the case too.
What about the one thing Detroit's done so well over the years is be patient, groom the young players. A couple years in Grand Rapids, they bring them up. I'm just tooling around before we came on. I was looking up on Hockey's Future. Ironically enough, they rate Buffalo last fall as having the top prospects in the game. They got the Leafs at 19th.
Yeah.
How does Mike Babcock speed up the process of turning those turning those players into the type of players he wants once they get up? He can't do that?
No, I don't think so. And let's not forget, there's a reason why you can be so patient in Detroit over the last few years.
Right.
The names are Datsyuk,
right,
Zetterberg, Lidstrom, and they don't have that luxury in Toronto. So now it's not necessarily about the wins and losses in year one or two. It's about the process moving forward and how the fans and management perceived it moving forward. They don't have to win this next coming season or even next season. What they have to do is look like they're competing and there's a lot more structure and the team will continue to move forward as the talent starts getting better and better you know, from month to month or year to year. That's what Babcock has to show right away, that the problems that they had in the back half wasn't lack of talent, it was lack of heart. And how long can Babcock now look like he's making a difference if that trend continues? Because when it's all said and done, Babcock doesn't score one goal, make one save, throw a body check. He's a coach. He's not a player. Can't go out there and be a difference maker if the guys don't play for him.
So the one missing piece to the puzzle right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs is a general manager.
Yeah.
Is that signing as important, more important, not as important as today's announcement?
I think it might change the dynamics a little bit. You know, the tendency, or at least not the tendency, but the feeling was that maybe a guy like Mark Hunter might not be quite ready for sort of title. But now the question is, now that Babcock's involved and involved heavily, what's his thoughts about a general manager? Would he like an experienced one? Would he like a guy like Mark Hunter, who's a pure hockey guy that he can work with now? And they also have to work side by side. That's not the general manager now looking down on his coach. Those are two guys side by side. And that's still very unique in our game today, is that all of a sudden, does Babcock need an experienced guy like a George McPhee coming in, who he's going to have to work with on a daily basis, as well as Brendan Shanahan? Or would he rather see a guy like Mark Hunter? So do you want to add another guy if you're Babcock? You already have your set management team already. Do you want to add another voice? Do you need another chef in the kitchen here for Babcock to manage or work with?
Are you suggesting they may not hire a general manager?
I think there's a chance that they may just tell Mark Hunter, you're the general manager. You're already here in place. You got your assistant general manager. We got our capologist. We got our head coach. Brendan Shanahan's involved in the day-to-day operations of the hockey club anyways as a president. How many more people we need? Babcock could sit there and say, we're fine the way we are right now. We don't need anybody else. Don't go and get anybody else. We're good.
I'm told that Sean Burke has been offered a job with you within the organization, and theoretically the title is assistant general manager.
Whatever it is, Brendan Shanahan certainly has a lot of time for Sean Burke. What that entitles, assistant general manager, I think they already have one. His name's Kyle Dubas. Is there a 1A, 1B?
I don't know.
Doesn't really matter. For Brendan, he's not caught up in the titles. He just wants what he perceives as good hockey people around that can just be part of this committee that now Mike Babcock is, and he's in heavily. That's all he wants. So I have no doubt that Sean Burke, in all probability, will be part of this organization in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, despite whatever the card says, the business card says, you know, Sean Burke's biggest challenge now will be starting to work with the goaltenders in the organization.
The big thing to do now, Nick, and we've seen it over the last couple of years, is when guys are coming off their entry-level deals and they're top players, is to lock them up long-term. And, you know, you see the 8-year contracts and all this stuff going out. I wonder how many top-quality, unrestricted free agents there are going to be in the years to come. So my question is this a day that's kind of changed the game where coaches are going to become the big free agent prizes, or is this an exception to the rule?
I don't know. Everybody's sitting there going, Gary Bettman's going to hate this because it's going to drive everybody's salary up. But how many guys are in a position to do this? And if you can have a run like Mike Babcock's had, or have the run that Joel Quenneville's had, then, you know, you could be amongst the highest paid coaches in North America and not look out of place. But that's a hard place to get to, right? Mm-hmm. It's really hard. And there's only 30 jobs, right? We talk about the goaltender, starting goaltenders in the NHL. There's only 30 of them. There's only 30 head coaches. So, you know, if you can have that type of longevity and that run that both Quenneville and Babcock have had, then you'll get your crack too. And that's the beauty of free enterprise, albeit in a salary cap era.
Well, you mentioned free enterprise. I mean, anybody who thinks that Babcock signing at 6.25, which what we assume it is, making him not only the highest paid coach, but more than double the second highest paid coach, doesn't influence the bar in future is crazy.
Sure.
There's historically there are innumerable examples of guys in different professions, not just sports, but in different professions who have set new bars for economic freedom.
Yeah.
And Babcock is the latest.
Oh, no.
5 years from now, there'll be five head coaches that'll make more than $3 million. Today, there are none.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is this the start?
See, of course it is. It's invariable.
How about in a couple of years with Joel Quenneville?
Of course.
Yep. I mean, does he not jump to 7 or 8?
He would have to.
Right?
Well, a year?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, but I...
Well, if Babcock's at 6'5", and he's made, you know, he's won one round in the last 4 years...
I understand what you're saying,
and
exactly.
And Quenneville's gone to conference finals 5 or 7 years, do the math.
Well, I think you got five...
Quenneville should make more money than Babcock.
Well, you've got... I think there are...
Logically.
There were five... Before Babcock signed, I think there were five head coaches making more than $2 million a year. I may be a little bit wrong on that, but that's about right.
Yeah.
5 years from now, there will be 15 coaches making over that number and at least five coaches making more than $3 million. Today, there's only one. And maybe you're right. Maybe a Quenneville, maybe a Hitch, if he goes someplace who has a better record over the last 4 years than Babcock, by the way. These guys are going to get paid commensurate with what the top guy gets paid. It's the same in every business.
There is a lot of coaches out there that are going to buy Babcock a beer.
They're thrilled with this.
My era, think about this, boys. Eric Lindros never played a game in the NHL. Gretzky had, 50 NHL records at that time, and he stepped in and became the highest paid player in the NHL.
Well, Nick, is this going to change rooms?
That's the way it works.
That's the way it works.
That's the way it works.
And when the bar goes up, everybody gets paid.
And is this going to change rooms, though? Because we've always heard, well, why is the $8 million player, why is he going to listen to the coach who's making $7.50 a year? Is this going to wake up some maybe overplayed players who can't say, well, he should shut, whoa, we're kind of making the same cash here?
Well, yes, Ken, and you do make an excellent point. There is no outweighing or outweighting out your coach when it comes to maybe certain disgruntled players, when it comes to ice time or a bad relationship. I mean, he's not going anywhere for a long time here, so it's abundantly clear to Leaf players, if they want to remain a Leaf, you better win this guy over.
Nick, it's a very interesting day. Thanks a lot for taking time for us, and we'll see you soon.
And to think, this guy doesn't even play. Thanks, guys.
Thank God. See you, Nick Kyprios of the NHL on Sportsnet down at their offices on Front Street.
Bob, how do you think the Toronto media is going to handle this? Because there's the old argument, I've been in a few scrums, and, you know, well, it doesn't really matter how the coach treats me, what he says, because I'm going to be here longer than he is. Well, maybe not now.
I don't think there's a relationship between how long Babcock lasts and how long his contract is.
So that argument still stands.
Well, maybe, maybe not. I like Babcock. He's always been fair.
What's not to like?
He's been accommodating and fair. And he doesn't take a lot of prisoners, but I think he's reasonable. And I expect he'll accommodate us and come on the show tomorrow. I expect he will be accommodating and come on with some level of regularity. We have never on this program pushed coaches to come on any kind of regular basis because we understand that they have a job to do and they're busy doing other things. But we do ask that they come on every once in a while just to give us an update on what's going on, or more directly, give the fans an update on what's going on. I think Babcock will be accommodating in that way. I think he'll fit in beautifully. What I'm really intrigued by is, what can he actually do with this mess?
And I'm intrigued by how patient is he going to be.
Well, all of that is part of the equation.
And why?
We'll talk more about it in the next hour. Up next, Shai Davidi of Sportsnet will join us. Some baseball talk when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour. This is prime time. McCowan and Reed in our Toronto studios. Hockey pucks, fear not. We'll have more babble about Babcock. Damian Cox will join us in studio. And then Bob Nicholson, the Oilers Entertainment Group CEO, will be with us. And we'll talk about his signing of a new coach. And was he interested in Babcock? Because there's obviously a relationship and a connection there. And if he wasn't interested... Clearly, he wasn't interested a long time ago, or had he just established that the market value of this head coach was out of his snack bracket? Meanwhile, Joel Sherman, who writes for the New York Post, has opined that it is time for the Toronto Blue Jays to trade either Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion for pitching help. It is... I suppose an interesting observation or speculation. It's not exactly outside the box. I am one who would listen to anything, but I don't believe the Toronto Blue Jays should trade either of these two guys for a young pitcher, somebody without significant street cred. And I don't think there's any team that has so much pitching that they're prepared to give up a number one or number two starter in order to get each of these guys. Having said that, if this team at the All-Star break appears like it will not make the postseason...
You give it that long?
Yeah, I think you got to go that long. Somewhere middle of July. It still gives you a couple of weeks before the interleague trading deadline, which is July 31st. In that window, if you've decided, if you're Alex Anthopoulos and the evidence is, well, we're not going to make the playoffs again, given their contractual situation, that's the time to make a move. And in that situation, you could ask for young pitchers as opposed to front-of-the-line pitchers. Our own Shai Davidi joins us to talk about this situation. Agree or disagree with that assessment, Mr. Davidi?
I would completely agree with that. And I think, like you said, the only way you really entertain moving those guys, well, one, if someone gives you a package that's just so stupid good, then obviously everyone has their price.
Right.
But if you're going to look to move one of those two guys, it's about a wider reset of where this team is at and trying to reestablish a bigger window. And if you're really going to take that drastic a step, the most logical time to do that would have been this past offseason, right? When you're trading away 2 years of control, teams haven't set their budgets, everyone is open to considering a number of different alternatives. And also, you're in total control of the process because the Blue Jays aren't going to be in control of the process by the middle of July because Jose Bautista already obtained 10-5 status, which gives him the right to veto any trade. Edwin Encarnacion is going to be there in a few weeks or a month or something in that
range. 6 weeks, I think.
July 3rd.
Right. So I mean, he's right around the corner. And so the Blue Jays won't have total process. They'll be able to pick and choose their team. Now, when I talked to Bautista about it in the spring, he said, you know, if he wouldn't necessarily use his veto because he believes, like, if somebody no longer wants you, then, you know, why?
There's no point forcing them to stay,
right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the best deal is to a team or a city that he absolutely doesn't want to go to. It's bad for his family or something like that. That becomes complicated. But, I mean, given where they're at, those are the only circumstances in which you consider it, right? Because if you're going to go through a wider reset, those are the two guys who can really jumpstart the process for you.
When I read this article by Joel Sherman Shy, it makes a lot of sense to me, and it kind of looks like the Blue Jays better do something right now. And if they're not freaking out, they should be freaking out. Publicly, they don't seem to be freaking out, but is there any vibe that you're getting? Or are you hearing anything behind the scenes that the front office or people within the organization are just befuddled by what's going on and maybe they are getting close to pushing the panic button?
No, I mean, this whole panic button thing, like, I just don't get it. Because, like, okay, you push the panic button thing, you're like, great, we're panicked. So, like, now we're going to start doing things without thinking. Like, I think if you're a front office that behaves that irrationally, then you shouldn't be in your job. That being said, I don't sense that there's panic, but I sense that there's urgency.
Okay.
And I sense that they're trying to scratch their head, try to figure out the best options. And the reality is that this roster has some construction issues, especially right now with Jose Bautista being unable to play the outfield and then having to fill in some spots in and around that, not being able to get Edwin Encarnacion some regular rest at DH, not being able to play Justin Smoke, not having the ideal bullpen set up, not being stable enough in the rotation. And the question that they have to assess is how much of that is going to self-correct over time. And some of it will self-correct, because I feel pretty confident in saying that Dickey, Burley, and Hutchison aren't going to finish the years with ERAs in the 5-6 range. And then how much of it do you need to upgrade? And some of it Daniel Norris can help, provided he gets himself straightened up. But I would expect we see him here within the next 2 to 3 weeks. And does whoever move into the bullpen from the rotation, be it Estrada or Sanchez, although I'm not sure how you move Sanchez into the bullpen right now based on how he's pitched in the last few outings, but does that person help out in the bullpen sufficiently enough to upgrade some of your other issues? So I think for this team, there is going to be some self-correction. There is going to be some natural inherent improvement. Whether or not it's enough, that part is tricky. But I don't think trading one of Bautista and Encarnacion solves the problem, because it's awfully hard to plug that level of everyday production and make it worth your while to fortify another part of the roster.
For me, I'm absolutely amazed. What are the Blue Jays now? 18-23.
Yes.
I'm absolutely amazed that the general message just seems to be, let's just wait it out and things are gonna change. It's gonna get better. And I see that argument, but I'm amazed that it keeps popping up for a team that's been losing for 2+ decades.
Sure, but they're also 4.5 games out of first place.
True.
Right? So the division isn't exactly running away from them. There isn't this monster team in the division that you're like, oh my gosh, they are just going to lock in and take off. I mean, every other club in that division has some sort of inherent flaw that is causing them to play at a similar level to that of the Blue Jays right now. So that's one reason why you don't knee-jerk things. But you also have to, if you believe in the talent that you have and it's better than the alternatives that you have, then I'm not sure what else you do. I mean, you can force the matter and make a bad deal, but you're not going to give up Jeff Hoffman or something like that for a stopgap. So, you know, do you scout the waiver wire, you see that stuff. There isn't anyone out there who's going to make a big difference for you. So in some ways you're stuck a little bit too, saying, okay, well, we've got to work with what we have in-house.
I said earlier in this conversation that what the Blue Jays need to aspire to is to get a front of the rotation starter. And I know that's a really easy thing to apparently say, but that is their need. They don't need a fourth or fifth starter. Some would say they do, but the truth of the matter is they need a number one guy. They don't have that guy. Many people thought Stroman would be that guy. He's hurt. Some thought Hutchison could be that guy. He hasn't pitched well enough. Neither Dickey nor Burley are likely to elevate themselves to that position. That's the guy they need. Is there any team out there that might be in such desperate straits or so hopeless that they might be willing to give up that kind of guy?
Well, not yet, but you'd expect that come trade deadline time, you know, Cincinnati Reds and Johnny Cueto is a pending free agent. You figure that they're going to move him, assuming that they don't go on some massive turnaround and suddenly take off in that central division. You know, there's some other guys who are going to be pending free agents. But the thing is, the cost for most of those guys is going to be astronomical, right? And then the Blue Jays have already spent a lot of their prospect capital in recent seasons. You know, be it when the deal with the Marlins, the Dickey trade, even last offseason with the Donaldson deal. I mean, there were three kids that went in that. So I mean, the excess prospect capital is gone in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, the one possible redundancy you can look at in your system is Max Pentecost, the catcher's first round pick last offseason. But he's recovering from some arm issues, and he hasn't played. I don't think he's played yet. I think he's still in extended spring training recovering. So, you know, his value is limited, even though there's a lot of upside. He could be a good chip. So are you going to start trading guys like Daniel Norris or Miguel Castro or Jeff Hoffman? Because that's what it's going to take to get
Well, you can't. I mean, I don't think you can do that. Do you?
No,
I think you've traded all the young players you can trade.
You can't throw a pitcher away in the deal, that's for sure.
You've got, well, you could trade a Burley, you could trade a Dickey.
Yeah, but then, here's the sad thing.
That doesn't get you that kind of guy, well, Bob, because it's...
I understand that, but you.
Yes.
But I'm simply saying you can trade guys who have, who are late in their careers, and those are the two guys, and who have big cap hits, although there's no cap, theoretically. Those are guys you could include in the deal if somebody demanded you give them a bat and a pitcher in return for a frontline pitcher.
Here's what I find terrifying about the whole thing. I would love to see Johnny Cueto pitching for the Blue Jays. I'm sure Johnny Cueto would love it because he's getting no run support at all in Cincinnati. But correct me if I'm wrong, Shy, this team needs more than just one starter. And that's what terrifies me is you need all these guys to step up.
Yeah, but the one thing, you comment on this. We've seen this before. We live in especially baseball, is a monkey-see-monkey-do mentality. When guys are hitting, everybody can hit. When guys are pitching, other guys can pitch. The Blue Jays are a prime example of that. One night they score 10 runs, the next night they score one run. This, you know, I think getting a stud front-of-the-line starter might just make every other starting pitcher better.
Well, it certainly balance the load and take some pressure off the other guys, right? And that's
part of it.
That's part of it. The other part of it is that if you've got that consistent guy who's giving you 7-8 every time, every turnout, right? Then all of a sudden the bullpen has a built-in rest day, and there's some other benefits to that. So then maybe you can cut off certain starts. You can because your bullpen's better rested than on other guys' starts days. You can maybe go in a little bit earlier to make a move to save a game before it gets out of hand and things like that, because you aren't as desperate for the innings. And there's also a feel element that's really important, is that when certain guys start, right, the hitters feel like, okay, today's a win day. You know, we're going to go out there and get a win. And that there's a tremendous amount of value that. I mean, you know, I talked to enough of Roy Halladay's teammates over the course of his time here who just – would just say that feeling that they had on days that he started, the confidence with which he took the field, I mean, you just can't replicate that. And that's why those guys are so rare and so difficult to get, and teams want to keep them. So, look, it'd be great if they could do that. I really think it's going to be incredibly difficult for them unless they make some very hard and painful decisions. And, you know, this isn't an apples to oranges comparison, but you look at the package that the Tigers gave up for David Price last year, and David Price came with an extra year of control compared to someone like Johnny Cueto or anything like that. But it was Drew Smyly, who had 5 years of control as a pitcher, and Nick Franklin, who an infielder, who power-hitting infielder, who had five or six years of control. So that's a really steep price. The Blue Jays can't put together a package that matches that right now without tearing from themselves inside. And that, again, you sacrifice one part of your roster to fortify another.
Right.
Are you ultimately ahead?
It's a good question. I suspect you're right that the Blue Jays don't have those kinds of pieces, and so we'll never get the answer to that question. But we'll continue to observe as they march along. Thank you, Shai, as always.
Thanks, buddy.
Damian Cox in the next hour, and Bob Nicholson, the CEO of the Oilers Entertainment Group. We'll talk about the Maple Leafs' big signing of today and the Oilers' big signing of yesterday. That's coming up here on Primetime.